From WCMU Public Media, this is Between the Lakes, a weekly recap of the top news stories impacting central and northern Michigan. I'm your host, Tina Sawyer. Coming up on the show, the state of Michigan has bet big on attracting businesses with billions of dollars in incentives and tax breaks. As gubernatorial primary races inch closer, some candidates say that strategy is not working.
Instead of trying to pick winners, we ought to just try and lower the burden on everyone, and the best businessmen and women will prevail and create more jobs right here in Michigan.
More on what the candidates are saying about creating new jobs in Michigan. And this week's Brain Teaser features a huge question on Michigan folklore. We'll lumber over that question after these headlines. Two federal court rulings this week put the brakes on efforts by the Trump administration to exert control over state-level election management. The U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled the U.S. Civil Rights Act of 1960 does not authorize the federal government to demand private voter data from states. Michigan is the lead plaintiff in that case. The Trump administration wants non-public records from the state that includes partial Social Security numbers, birth dates, and driver's license numbers. Michigan Deputy Secretary of State Agogo Adavier says the decisions affirm that states run elections, not the president.
And when you have the president of the United States doing that, it's very important that you have election officials and the courts all saying the same thing. It's good that that principle is being upheld and that voters can be reassured that they can vote normally.
Both decisions can be appealed to higher courts. A White House spokesperson says the administration expects to, quote, ultimately prevail. 37 priests and one deacon connected to the Diocese of Saginaw have been accused of sexual misconduct in a report released Thursday by Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel. WCMU's Kristen Kappas has more.
Of the named clergy members, 30 are presumed to be dead. The rest are no longer active in ministry. Nessel told reporters that no new charges have been filed. She says that's because some of the cases are too old.
It's our hope that this report provides a voice to those who have suffered in silence for so long and shines a light on those alleged offenders whose actions allowed them to evade true accountability.
Saginaw's bishop released a statement apologizing to the victims on behalf of the church and says they will continue to cooperate with investigators. The Saginaw report is the sixth in a series of seven ongoing statewide investigations into the Catholic Church. The remaining report will focus on the Archdiocese of Detroit and will be released later this year. In Saginaw, I'm Kristen Kappas, WCMU News.
A bipartisan group of Michigan lawmakers continue to call for a pause in new data center projects. Data centers, especially large hyperscale ones, have faced criticism for their massive energy and resource needs, potential to harm the environment, and concerns that they'll go obsolete. Democratic State Representative Dylan Wagella says taking time before approving new projects would help lawmakers figure out how to protect Michiganders.
We can put a moratorium, have regulations that protect working class jobs, that protect the environment, and that we really take a chance to think about, well, what does this AI future look like? Because we are being driven into this future of AI, and I don't think that everybody believes it is as inevitable as people are telling us.
Bills to create a data center moratorium currently sit in committees known for being graveyards, meaning they're unlikely to become law. Officials in Isabella County did not violate the Fifth Amendment rights of a property owner after auctioning off their home. That's according to an opinion handed down this week by the U.S. Supreme Court. WCMU's Rick Brewer explains.
Michael Pung's home was auctioned off for $76,000 after he failed to pay back taxes to the county. Pung's attorney argued he was actually owed the fair market value of the home, which was worth nearly $200,000. But the justices rejected the interpretation that just compensation equals fair market value under the Fifth Amendment. Matthew Nelson is one of the attorneys representing Isabella County. He says the high court reaffirmed legal procedures dating back to the 11th century.
So the fact that the practices here were consistent with practice going back to the common law in England was crucial.
The high court sent a portion of the case back to a lower court to confirm the auction of the Pung's home was conducted fairly. I'm Rick Brewer, WCMU News.
And the Pung family's attorney did not respond to our request for comment. And now it's time for this week's Brain Teaser. I'll pull from a hat either a random fun fact, a riddle, or a quiz question, all meant to tease your brain this weekend. So let's draw. And today's question revolves around Paul Bunyan Weekend this weekend and features a piece of this Michigan folklore. The first written story of lumberjack Paul Bunyan and Babe the Big Blue Ox was first published in what Michigan newspaper? Again, the first written story of lumberjack Paul Bunyan and Babe the Big Blue Ox was first published in what Michigan newspaper? The answer to this larger-than-life question after this. Michigan will have a new governor this year, and candidates on both sides of the aisle are criticizing economic incentives to attract corporations and create jobs. The state-funded agency that handles these incentives, the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, has come under fire on the campaign trail. WCMU reporter A.J. Jones joins me now to explain. Hi, A.J.
Hi, Tina.
So what exactly does the state do to try and incentivize businesses to come here?
So the state of Michigan has bet big on incentives to bring corporations and business to the state. Under Governor Gretchen Whitmer, the state created a $2.4 billion fund to attract business. The Michigan Economic Development Corporation is a state agency for a lot of this spending. So, for example, just to give you some insight as to how this sort of thing works, in 2024, Dow Chemical received a grant of $120 million from the MEDC for facility upgrades in exchange for keeping 5,000 jobs in the state through 2032. So this idea isn't new. Michigan is one of many states that does things like this.
Okay. Well, why is there so much pushback against incentives and the MEDC then?
Well, one is critics say it hasn't created many new jobs altogether. A Bridge Michigan analysis says the fund created around 1,800 new jobs in 2025 and retained another over 5,000, referring to the Dow grant I was talking about earlier. That was well short of a promised goal of nearly 20,000 jobs. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle got together and defunded the $2.4 billion fund for this fiscal year. The other criticism is that the MEDC has not been a good steward of money. So, for example, critics point to the Goshen plant. Now, this was an EV battery plant that was supposed to be built in mid-Michigan run by the Chinese company Goshen, but it fell through because of local backlash. Now the state wants around $23 million that's already spent back because of that plant. Eric Lufer is the president of the Citizens Research Council, a nonpartisan think tank. He says state officials and local communities are often not communicating about projects.
The relative lack of collaboration in Michigan between the levels of government in some cases hurts us.
So how do Republicans feel about the MEDC and the subsidies?
So gubernatorial candidates, including Perry Johnson and John James, who is the front runner, have criticized the MEDC and want reforms. Many want to focus on retaining talent that's already here and, in general, lowering corporate taxes and regulations. They say that will help businesses grow. State Senate Republicans actually put forth a bill late last year to get rid of the MEDC altogether, but it's likely to go nowhere. However, I did speak to former Attorney General Mike Cox, who is the other major candidate in the gubernatorial primary for the GOP. I spoke to him in Mount Pleasant, and he said he would support that legislation to end the MEDC, going further than his opponents.
Instead of trying to pick winners, we ought to just try and lower the burden on everyone, and the best businessmen and women will prevail and create more jobs right here in Michigan.
So we know Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson is the Democratic front runner for governor. What has she said about all this?
So Benson has not gone as far as calling for an end to the MEDC. The last time I spoke to her, she said the state needs to focus on increasing access to jobs, retainment, and investing in emerging industries like biotech and climate tech.
So workforce development and talent retention is going to be key to attracting the best employers to our state, far more than any, you know, incentives have shown to be.
Her primary opponent is Chris Swanson, the Genesee County Sheriff. He said he would audit and restructure the MEDC on his campaign website.
And AJ, how is the MEDC responding to all of these criticisms?
So the MEDC points to success stories all across the state. They say they generated $2.87 billion in revenue for small businesses last year. They do a lot more than just subsidies and incentives like this. Mm-hmm. They have a project list online that says they've secured over 10,000 commitments for jobs across nearly 700 projects statewide for this fiscal year.
Okay, great reporting on this.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with WCMU's A.J. Jones. Now it's time to reveal the answer to this week's brain teaser. We drew a Michigan folklore question that reads, the first written story of lumberjack Paul Bunyan and Babe the Big Blue Ox was first published in what Michigan newspaper? Again, the first written story of lumberjack Paul Bunyan and Babe the Big Blue Ox first published in what Michigan newspaper? And the answer is the Oscoda Press. Although the stories of Paul Bunyan evolved in logging camps around the state, the earliest written story about Paul Bunyan was published in 1906 by James McGillivray in the Oscoda Press. And because of this publication, the town of Oscoda has been claimed as Bunyan's birthplace, and a statue sits in the downtown area of the city to commemorate this. And if you got that one right, a big round of applause for you. That's all for this edition of Between the Lakes. Don't forget to subscribe to the Between the Lakes newsletter, linked in the show notes, where you'll find more of our reporting and analysis from across the region. Visit our website, wcmu.org, to find out how to listen to your local WCMU radio station. This podcast is produced in part by the members of NABIT Local 412. It was edited and mixed by Rick Brewer. Our theme music comes from Gabe Shaw. Mike Horace is our executive producer. And I'm your host, Tina Sawyer. Enjoy your weekend.